Hello and welcome back everyone to another episode of Artist on Air. Today at the show, recruiting superstar and the founder of Bluebird Recruitment, Machiel Kunst.
I think most people have heard about it. A players hire A players, B players hire C players. That's really true. It's in a book called Good to Great from Jim Collins. Incredible book, also highly recommended. So I think a great salesperson will strongly look at whether the founder is someone they want to work for and whether the hiring manager, if that's not the founder, is someone who they want to work for. So that you need to have in place very well.
If we talk to founders, usually hiring sales talent, especially account executives, is one of the bottlenecks founders face in accelerating their growth. So this is the reason I invited Machiel, the founder of Bluebird Recruitment from Amsterdam today, and wanted to get some insights how to best hire account executives in 2024. So Machiel told me about the necessary skills the best sellers usually bring to the table. He explained the importance of the role of the founder and the recruiting manager in the recruiting process. We talked about benchmarks. What are attractive and comparable salary packages in 2024 if you really want to attract the best people? And Machiel gave me a lot of insights into a constant hiring funnel. So don't start to hire if you just need people. Hire on a constant basis. This and many, many more insights you can hear about over the next 45 minutes with Machiel Kunst and myself, Julius Göllner. Let's go.
Artist on Air, der SaaS-Podcast für den deutschsprachigen Raum. Wertvolle Tipps von erfolgreichen Gründern, Top-Investoren und führenden Industriepartnern, die euch bei der Skalierung eures Unternehmens schnell und unkompliziert weiterhelfen. Zusammengestellt von Janis Bandorski, Julius Göllner und Matthias Ernst.
Hello and welcome back everyone to another episode of Artist on Air. And my guest today, live from Amsterdam, is Machiel. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Julius.
Thanks for coming with this super positive energy here. Yeah, also in Berlin, we have blue sky, we have sunshine, OMR is going on. So I think everyone is in their energetic, communicative mood. And we will, of course, try to transmit this to the podcast episode of today. We are talking about top talent recruiting and sales. Machiel, but before we do this, why are you the expert to talk to? What are you doing?
Got it. Okay, good question. So let me tell you a bit about my background, because I think that will automatically explain why I could be considered an expert on this field. My background is probably a bit different than what you would expect from a recruiter. After my law degree, I actually joined a software company as a sales development representative, doing cold calls and booking meetings for senior salespeople. The company I joined was called Enable Technologies. Just to give a bit of an idea of the size, they were with 80 people doing $6 million in revenue. And I ended up staying with them for 9 years. And throughout those 9 years, they grew to 850 people, $250 million in ARR. And we were acquired by a company called SolarWinds. We IPO'd, were taken private, and then IPO'd again. So in those 9 years, I went through an incredible journey. And as you can imagine, such growth also brings a lot of opportunity. So I grew from a sales development representative role into a customer success management role, a bit of an atypical progression path. And then from CSM, I went into account executive, became the number one seller worldwide, which was a really, really fun year. And then I was promoted into leadership because our senior leadership thought, okay, now teach people how to do that. And I've been in sales leadership for about 4 years, not just for Enable and SolarWinds, but also for FastSpring, where I also built an international sales team from scratch. So I think most of my expertise in hiring comes from the fact that I've actually been a hiring manager myself. Mm-hmm. And 4.5 years ago, I set up Bluebird, which basically came from, I'm not sure if I should call it frustration, but working with recruitment agencies was typically hit and miss. And I couldn't consistently rely on finding the right people through recruitment agencies. And because of that, I decided to set up Bluebird. And if I have to explain a bit about Bluebird within a nutshell, we were a collective of former SaaS professionals doing recruitment for software startups and scale-ups. What that means in practice is that if you're looking to fill any commercial or technical role, we have people that have had those roles themselves in the past. So if you're looking for a marketing manager, we have a marketing manager that will help you find a marketing manager. If you are you're looking to hire a front-end developer, we have a front-end developer that will help you find that front-end developer. And if you're looking for a sales director, we have a sales director that will help you fill that role. And that value proposition is working extremely well. And I think, yeah, based on the fact that I've been a hiring manager and based on the fact that I now run a recruitment company with about 20 people with offices around the world, you could call me an expert.
And I think the latest news said that you're expanding internationally quite a lot, Achil, and you opened an office in Australia, as I heard.
Yeah, yeah, which is I'm really proud of that, because I think our vision has always been to help software startups and scale-ups with hiring 70% of all of their people across the world. And 70% stands for all commercial and technical roles. So I don't think we're going to venture into HR and finance roles. We'll keep it to commercial and technical. And with our office in Sydney, we're literally capable of helping companies hire all across the world now. So that was a pretty big step. And geographically speaking, Germany is actually our biggest market, which I think you know, and it's one of the reasons why we invest a lot in Germany and why we love to come to the artist events as well. But we do most of our revenue, most of our placements in Germany, and we have a big team working on that market.
And why Australia? I understand you want to cover like 70% of the roles, also maybe 70% of the global markets, or is it just because of holiday reasons and you like to go to the sunshine from time to time, having some cool drinks and go surfing?
I'm not going to say that doesn't play a role. but if we have our HQ in Amsterdam, and from Amsterdam, we can do East Coast US and we can do Europe. And from Sydney, you can do APAC and you can do West Coast US. And realistically, APAC, Europe, and US are the most important markets for most software companies. And I think the luck or coincidence is that the person that's running our APAC operation, he used to work with me 10 or 12 years ago, and he was an extremely talented salesperson, and he ended up building out a few companies in the APAC region from scratch. So he's literally the perfect person to help companies venture out within the APAC market.
So it was a little bit opportunity driven, but of course gives you the coverage in terms of time zones and winter days in Europe. So brilliant decision, I guess. Let's go into the topic, Michael. And I think to do this, I'd like to get your perspective on sales recruiting market in general. Yeah? We're coming from the heydays, 2000, 2021, where everyone was spending money and growing and hiring crazy. I had the feeling that the last 1-2 years, we saw a lot of media news about people getting laid off, growth slowing down, companies optimizing on efficiency, meaning like really improving ARR per FTE, also like sizing down maybe the FTE. So how do you see the market 2024? What's happening? Are people still hiring? I mean, you said you're growing crazily. So what does the media say, but what's the view on a realistic market right now?
Yeah, I think most people will agree that we've gone back to normal times. Like if you see the charts of the growth of most software companies, it has always like quite stably gone up in a very healthy and very like fast growth way. And we've seen a massive spike in 2020, 2021, which was unrealistic. And I think valuations of a lot of software companies went through the roof. And if anything, I feel like it has normalized again. So obviously companies are not hiring as much, but I think that's actually very, very healthy because companies are over hiring less, which means there's less risk for a lot of people to be mass fired, which is obviously something I don't think anybody wants. So what I'm seeing is a market that's still growing well. Valuations are a bit lower, of course, which means, you know, VCs have invested a lot of money. They have high expectations. Those expectations might not be met. So a couple of companies might be in a bit tough waters. But the vast majority of companies that we work with are startups and scale-ups that are, you know, now raising new rounds. And we see that they're still growing steadily and doing quite well. Also depends a bit on what industry you're in.
taking a look on capital efficiency at this company, there could be the suggestion, okay, if money is tight, like my spendings for third-party providers and like agencies or any other value-providing services heavily is decreasing, which of course would affect you. How do you counterattack this, and how do you see this? I mean, probably your value proposition is super sharp, and time is king. Yeah, but I would be really happy to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, good question. So if there's no value that we can deliver to companies, they shouldn't work with us. It's that simple. And you know, there we have a pretty easy value proposition when there's companies that are just, they need to hire so much, they just need help. You know, think of companies like Deel, they're growing so fast that they just don't have enough people to do all the hiring for them. But with most companies, that's obviously not the case. Then it becomes a question of, is it worth paying the success fee to a company like Bluebird or not? The CEO of Muse, which is a rapidly growing software company in the Netherlands, actually said that they, you know, try not to do any hiring through recruitment agencies. And I responded to his LinkedIn post that I absolutely agreed with him. I think if you don't need to use recruitment agencies, you shouldn't. The problem is, if you're a founder of a software company, you're hiring your first sales rep, or you're hiring your first marketing manager, it's quite likely that you don't really know what good looks like. And I think most traditional agencies won't really be able to advise you on what good looks like, but we have so much experience within the market, not just as recruiters, but also as, you know, I've been the first sales rep for a software company stepping into a new market. So I know exactly what characteristics you need to look for, what type of experience someone needs to have. And I think that is the real value that we bring. Obviously, it's also the right person, but it's truly advising on what type of person you need to hire, what characteristics, what experience. And I think there's a lot of value in that, and that goes far beyond just placing a person at a company.
Yeah, and this is, I think, a value also usually you don't have, and you don't find internally, especially if you're early stage company, and you're not lucky to have maybe an experienced person like this in the company already. So it's something where you also have a willingness to pay. You mentioned that, Mariel, everyone is looking for great sales talent, high performers. We're always talking about high performers, the top 20%. So I think the first question, and maybe we narrow it down to AEs, because this is probably, besides leadership, one of your focus topics, Mariel. So what are the characteristics of a top-performing AE, a top-performing seller?
Yeah, I think the best salespeople have, I don't believe in a silver bullet answer to this. So I think it takes a lot to be a great salesperson. So I think where it starts, the first thing is that you need to master all of the basics, and that you're excellent at every single step in the sales process. So you can be incredible in building a return on investment, but if you're not good at then closing and challenging the customer at the end, you're probably still not going to get the deal. So I think you need to be great at everything. I think it's really important to, and the second piece is that it's important to have a genuine interest in the industry that you sell into, but also have empathy for the people that you're speaking with, that you can truly put yourself in their shoes and that you're trying to help them, because people will be able to sense that. And then the third thing is, I think the best salespeople that I've seen were able to multiply their time. So they would make such a good impression that companies would refer them to other companies, or they would work with partners that would advocate for them in the market and generate more opportunities for them. I think those three things, which are incredibly difficult to master, so it's a very broad answer, but I would summarize it like that. And I just think there is no easy answer to being a great salesperson. If you want, I'm happy to shed some light on what I think makes a great first sales hire, because I think that's quite a specific profile, which might be relevant for a lot of software companies that are listening to this podcast.
Happy to discuss this. Absolutely, Maria. I had a super interesting conversation with Seth DeHart from Point Nine about this, the first sales hire. We call it the sales pioneer. So if everyone like to take a look on this episode, very worth listening to it. So really interested to hear your opinion about it, because I totally agree. Yeah, the first hire usually needs a different skill set than like a regular second, third, fourth AE or SDR. So Let's maybe move into this, and I will keep my questions on the things you mentioned already. So hiring the first salesperson, who should it be?
It's what's really funny is that you mentioned Seth DeHart. I don't know if you know this, but Seth is a good friend of mine, and he was also my mentor when I was a sales leader years ago.
Didn't know this, no.
Okay, so we actually work together a lot. So Seth does a lot of work with Point Nine Capital, which I'm sure you know. And Point Nine Capital invests mostly in seed stage and sometimes Series A. And almost every single software company that they invest in, we help them hire their first sales pioneer. And so this also means that whatever I would be telling you today is probably going to be extremely similar to what Seth has told you, because Seth and I work together on most of those roles.
No problem. I think it's almost more than a year ago, Maria. So I think we can happy to refresh it a bit, because as you said, I think it's very important, especially if you are at this stage right now, to understand a little bit where to focus on when getting this first profile hired.
Yeah. And there's a couple of things that I've probably added it to make it slightly more complete and structured. So I think if you're a startup, you're hiring your first sales rep, you need to find someone who has startup experience. So let's say you've created an e-sign solution. You don't go and hire someone from DocuSign. Like the chance of that succeeding is really, really small, because working at a startup is very different from working at a large corporation. So I think startup experience is an absolute must-have. Then it's quite important to, the second piece is that someone needs to feel comfortable with the product complexity of your solution. And I don't want to say ideally, I also think this is a must-have. They must have sold a product of similar complexity before. So that means if someone has only sold a product like Zoom and you have an ERP solution, don't hire a person for Zoom. There's too much risk in the fact that they won't be able to deal with that level of complexity. And vice versa, if you have a pretty straightforward product, don't hire someone who sold a really complex product before. There's a good chance that they might not like selling that easy product.
Although Zoom sometimes feels like, Mario, it has the complexity of an ERP system already. Huh?
Yeah, it's true. There's a really, really interesting story behind that, by the way. Like really, really quick detour. The people that that built GoToMeeting are the same people that built WebEx, and they're also involved in Zoom. So it's like they create this simple product that everyone wants to use, build a lot of complexity into it for enterprises, and then they build a new product that's very simple, and they replace themselves all the time. And the founders of these companies make a ton of money doing that. So I wonder what the next Zoom is going to be. So we talked about startup experience. We talked about product complexity. I think the third one, and in total there are seven, quite complex to find that specific profile, but it is worth really nailing it. The third one is someone who has experience with selling the same deal sizes as you've sold before. Together with product complexity and deal size, based on those two, you know how complex it is to sell, because you might have a fairly straightforward product, but if the ticket size is really high, it's still very complex to sell because you'll have way more stakeholders. So ACV is really important. Then the fourth piece.
One question here, Maria, because I mean, exactly similar ACV size is difficult to find. So what's like a useful corridor? Would you say, okay, let's categorize it in SMB or very small businesses, SMB, mid-market, and enterprise. And these are the deal sizes, like four categories. And it should almost match one of the categories within, or how would you structure it?
Yeah, so I'd say there's... I'm not going to dive into PLG, but you have a really small deal size, of course, where product-led growth might be more useful than hiring a salesperson.
Definitely.
So I'd say deals from 10K to 30K is what is SMB, and then 30 to 100 is mid-market, 100K plus would be enterprise, and there's, of course, large enterprise strategic somewhere above.
Okay, got it. So ACV size should fit like previous experience. I think it's a point which is super relevant, because ACV size usually defines complexity of the sales cycle, stakeholders involved, length of the sales cycle. So there is a definitely higher probability that you have done the same size before. You have at least an idea of the process.
Exactly. Spot on. Then the fourth part is we believe that the challenger type of profile works extremely well for startups and scale-ups. So For the people that have not read The Challenger Sale, which I highly recommend to, like, any sales leader should have read it. And if you're a founder, you're going to read one book about sales. I think The Challenger Sale should be the one. CEB wrote this book, and it's based, CEB's subsidiary of Gartner. And they did a research amongst 200,000 salespeople to understand what makes someone incredibly successful during this day and age, where most companies can do a lot of research online already. And they nailed it down to a very specific character. It's someone who can challenge a prospect, who can push them out of their comfort zone, who can show to a prospect that where we are today is different from what the future will look like. And in order to be able to compete in the future, you need to change and you need to step out of the status quo. And especially if you don't have a big brand name, it requires that type of person to really bring your product to market. And the book also explains how to specifically qualify whether someone has the right characteristics for that.
We will definitely put it to the show notes, Michael. I think it's a very highly appreciated recommendation, and I can only really agree on this. So we have 4 points already for hiring the first sales guy or girl for the team. Tell us about the three missing.
Yeah, the three last ones. So this is just a part characteristics. I think if you hire your first sales rep, this person needs to feel like someone who's going to build the company with you. So this is more like a gut feel characteristic kind of thing, where you want to look for someone who's passionate about what you're doing. And when you tell them about the problems that you're solving, that you see that, you know, there's light shining in their eyes and they get excited about it. They get a smile on their face. So things like passion for the product, the industry, grit, ambition, someone who's going to work hard for it, who wants to progress, who wants to build the company and also build their career within your organization. I think those things are also really important. That would be the fifth piece. And the sixth is a very basic one. I think when you're hiring for a startup, this person should have 1 year of SDR experience and ideally 2 years of AE experience, if you can afford it, because we all know Germany is extremely competitive. So packages also have skyrocketed over the past years. But ideally, someone has a year of SDR experience and 2 years of AE experience. That 2 years of AE experience is important because then they have seen enough and they can have really proven that they're good at the work and they're not too inexperienced for it. And the 1 year of SDR experience is actually immediately the last point. Someone needs to be excellent at prospecting. On the one hand, to make sure that they create opportunities for themselves. On the other hand, because they can build the playbook for your SDR team and train them. So you immediately have a team lead for your SDR team as soon as you start hiring SDRs. So those would be the 7 points.
I have some questions here, Michael, because sounds completely logic in theory, but now let's imagine I am a software founder and we're building a very, let's say, dry, over-exaggerated, boring product. Yeah, we do data management for ERPs, software as a service, and you said, okay, you need to find people who have industry experience and you need to people who are passionate about what they are doing. So I'm coming to Bluebird now. I said, like, hey, Michael, I really need someone who has experience in this industry and who loves to work with data cleaning and processes for ERPs.
Yeah.
In reality, how do you make this possible? Because of course there are a lot of founders who work on super verticalized, sub-verticalized topics, which have big value, but maybe from an outside perspective are not as attractive as the sexy business models in marketing.
Yeah, really, really, really good question. And I have a nice story about this, I think. First of all, I don't think people need industry experience. Just to correct that and make sure companies don't think, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes companies make is that they look for someone with industry experience, where that means you're just missing out on a lot of talent that can probably quite quickly learn what your industry is like. So just to make sure people don't misinterpret that. Then as to your question, the first company that I started working for, Enable, they sold a remote monitoring management and automation solution to IT service providers.
Ooh, okay.
While I'm saying it, I'm already almost falling asleep and I'm not triggered at all. I can tell you one thing, every single founder is passionate about what they do. And yeah. there's a reason for it. And it's just about making sure that people understand the reason behind it. So I was not necessarily really interested in selling. I'm going to abbreviation is RMM. So I sold an RMM solution. I didn't have a ton of interest in that RMM solution, but I did have a real interest in what was behind it. So I think founders really have to be able to explain that story really well. And they're often very capable of doing that. So the story behind it was that IT service providers, so think about your local IT company that helps you at Artist, making sure that all the equipment works and your servers don't break down and your computer works, et cetera, et cetera. If you look 10 years ago, if something would break down with your computer, someone would come to your office, fix the computer, you can't work for a couple of hours, and then they go back and you get an invoice for the hours that they worked.
Correct.
What our technology did is that you could automatically monitor all those devices, and before anything would go wrong, it would detect that something was about to go wrong, and automatically the problem would be able to be solved. Mm-hmm. The people that we sold to loved that technology. They thought that seemed amazing. Like, okay, that's really cool technology. The problem was they can't sell ours anymore because problems are being solved automatically. So it's actually, they wouldn't be able to sell their hours. They were like, okay, but then I can't make any money off of it. Then we had to help these IT people to transition their business model from selling hours to just selling a managed contract and their customers paying a fixed fee and that they would just do all their IT stuff. And that was actually way better for those IT companies as well, because then they get recurring revenue and the value of their business goes up. And it's actually, they're not like putting out fires anymore. It's good for the customers as well because their technology all works all the time. That I really liked. So I didn't necessarily, the RMM stuff I didn't really care about, but the fact that we were really changing that industry, and right now almost every IT service provider uses technology like Enable, that I could get behind. And when the founder was speaking about that, like, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, we're really changing these people's lives, and that's amazing. And we sometimes speak with founders that tell a very technical story, and we help them understand, like, okay, what is the business impact of it? And is that something you can stress a bit more when you're speaking with good salespeople? And I think every company, even if it's a data management for ERP solutions, there is a story behind that where you're impacting companies and making an impact.
So it's like really, if I read in between the lines, Maria, it's also really getting people passionate about the job by really showing them the value add, not only on a monetary side you're providing, but really in changing something, disrupting an industry, doing something new, doing something different than the existing players. And then with this story, really creating passion and curiosity for sales talent. Yeah. So it's something probably also founders need to learn, I guess, yeah, because they're super much into their software, super much into the detail. They can talk about all the features they're providing, but if they want to hire top talent, they also need to learn to tell the, let's say, the disruption story of the business, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is also where, because typically there is a monetary impact by buying a solution and implementing it, but also understanding how it makes the life easier of the people that you're selling to, and that empathetic piece to it is really important, I think.
Yeah. Then let's maybe going back to the skill set, the necessary skill set of a good seller. And you mentioned, okay, you need to be top-notch expert at all stages of the funnel as an AE, yeah? I mean, of course, if I have a white paper, I would also write this down, yeah? Just getting people who are perfect in everything. Also, reality check here, yeah? How do you test this? You know, like, how do you really, if you talk to talent, if you want to recruit people for your clients, how do you check this? And what would you recommend to founders listening, how they check abilities to manage the funnel?
Yeah, so I think I recommend companies to do a business case with account executives. And I think the most crucial part of a sales cycle, so if there has to be one silver bullet thing, I'd say the discovery call is the most important piece.
Yeah.
And you can also get a really good feel for what it's like to work with the salesperson. So it's mostly giving them enough information about the solution that you're selling so they can do a proper discovery call. And that means you can see whether the candidate will prepare well and make sure they understand the industry well, understand your product well, et cetera, et cetera. And based on that information, know exactly which questions to ask to qualify whether this company is a good fit for the solution that you're selling. Mm-hmm. This doesn't cover everything, right? Like, so there's no perfect answer to your question. But I think doing a discovery call with the candidates that you're speaking with for an account executive position is probably the best way to go about it.
Because it can also like probably challenge a lot of other dimensions you mentioned, yeah? Like how empathic is the person talking to the clients in this conversation, yeah? How much curiosity does it have about the problems of a potential client, and how much is the seller challenging this problems and the current position of a potential client? So we are back at challenger sales, yeah? So I think it's a good anchor point like to do this, because you get insights into a lot of required abilities of a talent. Okay. I definitely got it. You also mentioned empathy, yeah? So is empathy, because this is also like kind of a buzzword in sales, yeah? Like everyone is talking about empathy. Chris Kwas was talking about empathy. Empathy is everything in negotiating hostages around the world. Is empathy something you can learn? Is it something like everyone can improve in, or is it something which is just like given by birth and you need to find people who are either empathic or not?
I don't know if I have the perfect answer to it, but I do know, I don't know whether you can learn empathy. And I do have to say, I think I became way more empathetic throughout my life. So maybe you can. But what I can definitely say is that you can, there's a lot of things you can do to get a better understanding of the problems that your stakeholders run into, and how you can potentially solve those problems, or what the impact of those problems are, what the benefit is if they solve those problems. So even if you have a lack of empathy, you could still come across quite empathetic by understanding what these prospects deal with.
The question is, do you manage this in 2 or 3 months during the recruiting process? Yeah, I mean, I know you recruit even faster, Maya, but got the point. I want a little bit flip the coin, because we are talking about a lot about, okay, what should we test at potential candidates? And my experience is that the really great sellers, they come with a lot of questions, yeah, and they challenge you as a potential employer about what they can get, what they perceive, and not only on the monetary side. There's a lot of different dimensions these people are really checking before they make a decision. So if I'm a founder, which questions should a potential new hire ask that if it's a good sales guy or girl?
Yeah, I think even if it's not specifically for sales, so I might answer your question a bit broader, but I'll try to nail it down regarding sales a little bit. But I think if the most people that I speak with look at a company from 3 or 4 perspectives, they look at the people and the culture is one. They look at whether they can go through personal and professional development. Some people have a clear preference for certain products. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is the monetary aspect.
Yeah.
That means that if you have someone in the process, like I would really, also if I'm hiring for my own company, I want people to really make an effort to understand what type of culture we've built in the organization. I want that people care about that, because I only want to hire people that at least fit within the culture and ideally add something to the culture that we already have. So I'd like them to ask questions about that. From a personal and professional development perspective, one of the biggest reasons why a salesperson will or will not join you is the hiring manager that you have in place. If you have a sales leader in place that's a B player, I think most people have heard about it. A players hire A players, B players hire C players. That's really true. It's in a book called Good to Great from Jim Collins. Incredible book, also highly recommended. So I think a great salesperson will strongly look at whether the founder is someone they want to work for, and whether the hiring manager, if that's not the founder, is someone who they want to work for. So that you need to have in place very well. And then the product, the best you can do is make sure somebody truly understands the problems that you're solving, which is what we just talked about. But if someone just isn't a fit with the product that you're selling, like, you don't want to make too much of an effort and just kind of leave it there. And then the monetary aspect, I don't think you should overpay. I think you should, on the one hand, make sure what you're paying is competitive with the market. We have salary benchmarks for that. And I think what's really important is making sure your targets are achievable, because a great salesperson is going to ask about all those metrics. And they want to know whether how many people are hitting their quota, what the best salesperson in the company is earning today. And if you don't have a sales team yet, you at least need to be able to really clearly explain, like, hey, this is what your target is going to be. That's going to be very achievable, because look at the numbers that we have today. So those are some pointers.
You mentioned a quite interesting thing, benchmarks, especially for AE roles now, Mariel, in the DACH market. Maybe this is something which would have a lot of value for our listeners here. So because this is a question which is asked a lot of times, yeah, what should I pay nowadays for a good seller? And probably we need to differentiate a little bit between junior AE, midtime AE, senior AE. Yeah, there are differences, of course, but maybe you can give us a bit of a hint where you see salary benchmarks for the DACH region in 2024.
Yeah, so we did quite extensive research on that last year, and I don't think it has changed much, but we are going to redo it for this year as well. So I'm happy to share it with everyone that's listening. So if we can add that somewhere so people can download it, I'm happy to do that. But what we've done is we checked with candidates depending on their years of closing experience, how much they're earning today. And then we've looked at, okay, what do you need to offer in order to be able to reach 25% of the total candidate pool? What do you need to offer if you want to reach the majority, 75% of the candidate pool? And what is top range that you need to offer if you want to hire the absolute best people? And we've put that all together. So maybe I can give a bit of insight. So for like an SMB account executive with 1 or 2 years of experience, you're quite quickly around 60K base. And you know, a 50-50 split is quite common, but let's say anything from 40 to 60K commission on top. And then if you're looking at someone with 3 to 4 years of closing experience, it's around 80K base. And again, typically 50-50 split, but you can sometimes get away with a bit less commission. And then an enterprise AE, mid-levels almost always around 200K OTE 50-50 split.
So 100K is, as I understood, the minimum I need to calculate in if I want to have an AE, SMB business, fast sales cycles, not too experienced. It's the minimum I need to take into account if someone, of course, is qualified to hit her or his quota. What's the upper range? Okay, what kind of salaries do you see for the top 5 to 10%? Is it okay? The really good people will ask, like, what are the best people in the company earning? So just. Yeah. I mean, I know it's not a benchmark, but at least gives maybe also some listeners a feeling for how attractive this profession can be.
Yeah, really attractive. I think if you look at top sellers within, you know, software scale-ups, I think realistically you might be able to earn up to 300-350K OTE if you're overperforming a lot. So that won't be your official OTE, but if you're overperforming a lot, that's what you would be able to earn. I know that there's reps at companies like Salesforce and SAP, which I don't have experience at those large corporates. I also wouldn't be a fan of working there despite what they would pay. But if you want to earn most, you need to become a top seller there, which I do think is a very political game. And the probably most appealing part is if you work at a company that's pre-IPO and you get good equity because you joined the company fairly early. However, it's really hard to assess early whether a company is going to IPO, and it's only 1 in every 1,000,000 software startups that IPO. So that's almost too difficult to assess. And maybe to give a bit of insight, when I was working at Enable and we IPO'd, that was actually the most lucrative period for me as a sales rep. So that was not at a startup, but after the IPO, because I got RSUs every year. What that basically means is that every over a 4-year period of time, your equity vests and you can then sell it right away. So if you're working for a pre-IPO company and you have equity, you can only ever sell it if there's a liquidity event and you go IPO or the company is sold. But if you're on the public market and you have equity, you can basically sell it whenever you want because it's an open market. And every year we got a bit more. So you basically have golden chains and it's really hard to leave. So that can be quite appealing for post-IPO companies. That being said, for me, that's not an environment that I get passionate about. I want to build and create, and that's what I enjoy.
I'd like to put the finger to two other things you mentioned, culture and existing leadership, Maria, which are very important for hiring the best talent. Culture for me is always like very difficult to grab. Yeah, like it's something which is there, but difficult to describe, difficult to transport. So what is your recommendation for leaders hiring? How should they what should they do to really communicate their culture or to make the culture to experience for candidates? And do you see some common characteristics in terms of culture? What people, especially maybe the younger generation, is looking for? What are companies they're choosing?
Yeah, this is an endlessly complex topic that you can.
It's perfect. We have 30 seconds for this. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So, and that's fine. But this is an endlessly complex topic. But I think to talk quite generalistic about it, I think companies need to find a really good fit, a really good balance between a high performance culture mm-hmm. and a people centric culture. I truly believe you can be both. I think at Bluebird we've successfully done so. And I think it's really hard for software companies, as soon as they get a lot of external pressure from investors, to still be people-centric enough. So a lot of these founders start with great ideologies and they treat their people really well. And then as soon as they get investors, a lot of pressure comes, and then they realize, okay, we need to go more to high performance. And then it goes at the expense of the people-centric part too much. And I think founders and leaders should shield the company from the intense pressure that comes from investors and make sure there's a really good balance between people-centric and high performance. I think what you meant, like maybe to give some very practical tips, what is really important nowadays is flexibility and making sure that people don't have to come to the office every single day. And my perspective on that is, if you hire very junior people, there are really good reasons why they should come to the office so they can learn from the people around them. But if you're working with slightly more senior people, give them that freedom. Like we give a lot of freedom to our people at Bluebird, and they do their work. They appreciate it. They pay that. They take responsibility because they get so much freedom. And not everyone will do that. And it's your task to hire the right people who can deal with that flexibility. But because of you, if you've had some bad experiences, that shouldn't push you to then, you know, push everyone into the office. It becomes really difficult, especially in the German region where the war on talent is so intense. If you don't offer that flexibility, it's really hard to compete.
And I think like the high performance side dimension is probably quite clear for a lot of people applying. So if I got you right, as a founder who's hiring for the best, who's looking for the best talent, put effort and communicating like people centricity, like really make sure that people understand that you take care of them, that you give them opportunities, that you give them flexibility, probably training, other dimensions as well. So really put the seller into the center of attention, and also like communicate this in the interviews I get.
Yeah, and to add to that, great salespeople will also want a high performance culture.
Yeah.
So they don't just want to be cradled and treated really well. They also want to be in a company where there's really high talent density and they're working with other great people.
Coming to my maybe last question or point, Mariel, which you mentioned, and it's 100% right. Yeah, like great sellers like to work with great leaders. How can you as an IC identify a great leader? How can you as a founder maybe identify a great sales leader you would like to hire? And what do you need also, maybe what do you need to do as a company to ensure that if you found a great sales leader, also other people understand it's a great leader? So I guess they need to talk about what they're doing. They need to be present on LinkedIn. They need to be present on other stages. So how do you find these great leaders, and how do you leverage a great leader if you have him?
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously we do a lot of executive search, so I could also talk about this for a long time. But
we do this in the next episode, I guess.
Yeah,
it's different topic, I guess. Yeah.
So when we help software companies hire executives, we basically use Andreessen Horowitz, which is one of the most famous venture capital firms. We use their model for hiring executives, which means we're going to sit down with a company. we're going to talk about what the mission is for this person. So what do they need to do over the next 12 to 18 months? We'll talk about specific outcomes that these people need to achieve. So, you know, 5 to 8 specific outcomes, like building an outbound machine, hitting this revenue target, et cetera, et cetera. And then we'll talk about competencies. So common activities, how must this person operate, what experiences would give them a unique advantage in achieving those outcomes. So just answering what makes a great leader is very difficult in generic terms. So I would say that any person that wants more insight into that specifically for their company, I'd rather have a one-on-one conversation and dive a bit more into detail. Mm-hmm. But once you hire that great sales leader, you know, this should be someone where, like, I think salespeople will automatically have a good gut feel for whether this person is inspiring, knows what mm-hmm. they're talking about, asking really good questions, giving insights that they haven't thought about themselves yet. So what I did might be a nice example. When I was working at FastSpring, and when I hired for sales development representatives, for example, I would literally show them my structure for doing business development and how I would run a cold call. And I would train them on how to do it. Most SDRs have never been trained properly. So for those people, that was really inspiring to be trained by someone who has great experience in doing outbound sales. And that made them really want to join the business because they thought, hey, I can learn. I probably learned a lot more during this interview process than I have learned over the past year with the company that I'm working at. That type of finesse and inspirational excellence, basically.
Got it. And how would you, how would you message or transport this kind of stuff to people who maybe are not in the application process yet? So, you know, like if I really want to attract talent who are in maybe decision-making process and are looking for a new opportunity, how can I position my existing leader that they will be recognized as you say, inspiring, as a thought leader, as a AAA leader on the market?
I do have to say, I think the only real way to do that is through one-on-one conversations.
Okay.
I don't think it's worth for every industry to build a massive social media presence and be a LinkedIn influencer. Mm-hmm. I think there's some value to it, but I know tons and tons of great leaders that are not LinkedIn influencers. I know LinkedIn influencers that are not great leaders reality. So I don't put a lot of weight on that, to be honest.
And you would say there is like a flywheel. So if you have the skill set of being a AAA leader, you're doing this one-on-one conversations, then people will talk about it and people will recommend you and people will tell their friends about you. So you think there is like a brand which is building organically just by doing this conversations and helping people at their career. So it's interesting because I talked to, I think I talked to Sarah Archer from ChartMogul, and she said like doing conversations like 20, 25 hours a month is part of her job, even if this conversation does not have anything to do with direct hiring. Yeah, so she just like said, okay, she always tried to have a funnel, top of the funnel filled with talent, which are not in the decision-making process, which are not ready to hire, but she keeps this kind of conversations going to have a talent pool ready. And I guess doing exactly what you're mentioning, Mariel, like doing conversations, inspiring people on an ongoing basis by one-on-ones.
I can fully get behind that because literally every consultant within the Bluebird team speaks to 1,000 to 1,500 people every year, just making an effort to make a good impression, try to help, give some advice. And you know, there's a lot of reciprocity that comes from that.
1,000 to 1,500 conversations a year. I think this is like an ambitious target. We will close down the content part for today. So please let us know in 365 days if your leader, if you manage to do this. If so, probably you will never have a hiring problem again. Mariel, thanks a lot for taking the time this morning and giving us some insights about hiring, especially AEs and DACH. Anything we missed out, anything you'd like to mention or to tell here, which I have forgotten to ask?
I think you need to ask me about my favorite restaurant.
this I definitely will do at the end. But yeah, so if there's nothing on the content side, I mean, I think a great way to contact you is first LinkedIn, if I'm right, messaging Maria. Second, of course, we will put the books and also maybe the Andreessen Horowitz framework to the show notes, as well as the your compensation benchmark report. So everyone who likes to take a look, you will find it in the show notes. If you want to meet Mariel, he will definitely be, I guess, at Artist Summit in October, the one way or the other, and at the next circus, where Mariel had a masterclass, like a workshop a couple of weeks ago, which was highly successful. People loved it a lot. Yeah, but if you don't have anything else, last chance now, Mariel, of course, I'd like to know where to eat in Amsterdam.
Yeah, so before I answer that question, what I do want to mention is I want to really thank you for inviting me to the podcast, but also you've played a big role in our presence in Germany over the past years, and I really enjoyed this conversation. So I think what you're doing within the German SaaS scene is incredibly important, so thank you for that.
Thanks a lot, man.
Restaurant-wise, I like all types of food, but I think my absolute favorite restaurant is Aan de Poel. I've been there three times now. It's close to Amsterdam, and all three times were literally the three best dinners of my life, which is pretty incredible. So I can highly recommend.
What kind of a kitchen is it, or why was the experience so great, Maya?
Well, I haven't been to a ton of Michelin star restaurants in my life, so this was this was one of the first Michelin star experiences I had, and I typically never really loved fine dining because I'd rather have a proper meal, but they have this they can have a menu that you can choose, which is just their signature dishes, and just every single dish scores a 10 out of 10, and and it's a really great atmosphere and everything, so I absolutely love that place.
Next time when I will be in Amsterdam, which will probably be the SaaS Benelux Summit from Johan, I will try to manage to
go
there.
Together.
Yeah,
we
I'll let you
together.
Know. Yeah, like you need to show me. Mario, thanks a lot. I'm really looking forward to any other projects we are doing together over the next year. Wish you big success in geographical expansion. Happy to visit also your Australian office if I'm there. And thanks a lot for your time. See you next time. And best wishes.
Thank you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Big thanks everyone for listening and tuning in to Mariel Kunst and myself, Julius Göllner, and I hope you learned a lot about sales recruiting today. If you would like to learn more about go-to-market strategies, learn from the best operators we have in the Central European region, then you definitely should come to the Artist Summit on the 10th of October of this year. Once again, for the third time, we bring together a very curated and selected crowd, 500 founders and CXOs only, together with 125 of the world's best SaaS investors, one day in Berlin on the Thursday. Of course, there will be a lot of satellite and side events around it during the Berlin SaaS Week. So if you do not have your ticket yet, please take a look on www.artist.net, apply for a ticket, and we hope to see you soon in Berlin at the Artist Summit 2024. Thanks and see you next week, Julius.